parallels with the AIDS virus and the AIDS outbreak, which of course itself seems to have come from West Africa in the late 70s, as Ebola has. It was very slow to respond internationally at a political level, at a scientific level, at a funding level, and not least at a pharmaceutical level, until the AIDS virus affected what the press called innocent groups. When it went beyond gay men in America, when it affected women, people with haemophilia, babies, and so on. It was only then that the institutions responded. And part of the issue has always been for the pharmaceutical industry that unless enough people are affected, they won't invest in research. And it's the same situation now with Ebola. So, that's a big chunk of this, is that there's very little research going on. There is some research going on in America into a virus for Ebola. But the bigger picture is that these countries where these viruses emerge, cross over from animal populations and so on, are countries that are incredibly poor, where the environments and living conditions of the people are squalid, and where we have to really take seriously our human obligation to enable economic development to take place.
Professor,
so that the poverty is dealt with and the environments are dealt with. That's the real upstream stuff that needs to happen.
So, Professor, the thing is that as you said, it's big pharma. It's pharmaceuticals that make billions of pounds, and they spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds on research, and they want to get that money back. I mean, they're not charities, these big companies, and that's the first thing they'd probably say to you. So do you think that these big pharmaceutical companies not only have a moral duty, but should be forced into doing a kind of pro bono work that lawyers would, that if there is a virus like this, that they should be doing it as an act of charity?
I think if they won't take it on voluntarily, I think we do need to look at having a legal and fiscal and tax framework that forces them to do it. You know, capitalism hasn't always been nakedly about profit. If you think about the Roundtrees, if you think about the other Quaker business folk from the Victorian period, they have a very strongly developed sense of social obligation, in many cases to their workforce, providing housing and social benefits and education for the children of the workers and so on. Capitalism hasn't always just nakedly been about profit, but we do seem to be in an era when it is, and where there don't seem to be a social side to it.
And do you feel that they effectively think there's no money in dead Africans?
There's no money in dead Africans, as far as they're concerned. But as soon as white people from Europe or America start to become affected, then they sit up and start listening. I mean, I think what's interesting this week is that although it's likely that if we had any cases in the UK or in any other European countries, we'd cope okay with it because we've got decent healthcare systems, we've got good isolation systems and so on. But actually having all this news splash all this week has really mobilised public to start thinking about this. And I think that what I tried to do in that article today is to say, actually, what we've really got to do is hold up the mirror to ourselves and say, aren't we a bit of a disgrace not taking this seriously because it's among poor people in West Africa?